Welcome to an enlightening podcast from IslamPodcasts.com. We encourage our listeners to please comment and let us know how we can grow in our knowledge to better serve our community. Please remind your family and friends to also visit IslamPodcasts.com for engaging discussions on current events, Islamic guidance, Quran, tafsir, seerah, and much more. Thank you for listening to this podcast. Podcasts on current events, Islamic guidance, Quran tafsir, and seerah are available at islampodcasts.com as well as on iTunes. Rate, review, and comment and let us know how we can grow in our knowledge to better serve our community. Please subscribe, share, and tell a friend about islampodcasts.com as well as rate, review of iTunes.
The question is, when there are two different opinions by mujtahideen or fuqaha or scholars, and I, as a lay person who may not have enough knowledge or tools to realize what is right or wrong, what is the burden on me? What do I have to do in order to, and which opinion to follow, and how do I proceed in this manner? Well, this question is too general, and it's an important one. Number one, if the issue has to do with aqidah, with iman, this is your iman, this is not his or his. So this is personal. So you must make sure that this idea, this concept you are believing in is correct. Because in the iman issue, if you happen to believe in something wrong, idea that is wrong, belief, it doesn't help to say, oh, I got this from my friend. Because the Quran is very specific about this. Those who have been told, why have you believed in this or that, they say, oh, these are my parents. And he tells them, أَوَإِنْ كَانَ أَبَاؤُكُمْ لَا يَعْقِلُونَ. Maybe your parents did not rationalize. So that doesn't take the burden off your shoulder. So if the issue has to do with aqidah, we have no other choice but to teach ourselves to the point where I understand and believe that what I have believed in is correct. So we have to raise our knowledge. So we cannot be excused if what we believe in is wrong. Now if it turns out to be that I am taking something from you and what you have is right, then I'm lucky. Then by luck, I'm a good believer, or I'm believing in good and correct things. But if it turns out that I take it from someone and it turns out to be wrong, man, I'm in big trouble. And it doesn't help to say, oh, I got it from somewhere else. That's an aqidah. But in ahkam, which has to do with behavior, with acts, like how do I pray, how do I fast, whether I vote or I don't vote, whether I stand up for an oppressive ruler, or I stand with him, because those are opinions that exist in the Muslim societies. Those are acts, and those depends, because those require so-called ijtihad, and ijtihad is a delicate issue. Now, going back to the aqidah issue, our aqidah, Allah Azza wa Jal made it simple. Our aqidah is not complicated. Our aqidah, you believe in the Quran, it's from Allah Azza wa Jal. That's not very difficult. Believe that Allah is the one and only one God, that He doesn't have associates. Those are simple, that Muhammad, the Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, is a messenger. We believe in angels. In aqidah, things can be verified easily. Those are not difficult ones. But in the ahkam, sometimes they become delicate because maybe a hukum relies on a hadith. And the hadith, you don't know it or I don't know it. Somebody found it in old books of history, so he knows the hadith. So that makes it a little bit more difficult for me to verify. However, now, in the best case, I have to exert an effort as a Muslim to understand the reasoning of the mujtahid. Especially if I have the ability to analyze and rationalize. Like I'm a professor of computer science. So I cannot claim that somebody is giving me an opinion about riba, and I cannot analyze his reason. Somebody tells me, you know, in this country, the riba, part of it goes as taxes, part of it goes for, it will be returned as part of your tax, or maybe the 7% riba, you eventually pay only 2.5%. So it's not that big of a riba. So if somebody giving me this reason, okay, and therefore it's halal, it's okay. Or somebody says, if you buy one house, finance one house, in riba it's okay, but if you do two, the second one for investment, that's not allowed. Okay, now, maybe someone who didn't go to school at all, so he's absolutely, he cannot follow reasoning, he would say, okay, this sheikh told me that, so I'll follow him. But for me as a person of knowledge, I have a PhD in computer science. I was able to go to school, and I can read, and I can analyze, I can get results. And I say, oh, this sheikh told me that, so I take it. I think I'll be hiding behind an ignorance that I do not qualify to. Not everybody qualifies to be ignorant. Because ignorance, sometimes it becomes a privilege. Not everybody can qualify, can get that privilege to be ignorant. I cannot. It's beyond that. I already lost my right to be ignorant. Okay? Now, in the Muslim Ummah, the majority of the people in the Muslim Ummah do not qualify to be ignorant. So that's said. It means that at least I have to be able to analyze. If somebody tells me, this is right, this is halal, I say, okay, give me your reason. I don't know the reason. Give me your reason. Give me your dalils. Give me the hadith. Tell me how you arrived at this conclusion. And then I will be able to, at least with certain degree, to either accept or reject. And then after that, if I accept based on my best understanding that it's okay, I'm okay. But if I accept it because it coincides with my desire, you know, there are two opinions. One of them is, you know, because I keep bringing this example about financing with riba because it's very important. And I want to buy a house. I really would like to buy a house. And there are two opinions. One of them is saying that financing with riba is haram, and one is half and half. So I said, okay, the one going half and half, tell me your reasons, brother. He gives me a couple of reasons. And you know what? That's okay. So I know his opinion because I want to buy it. It's not because I'm convinced. I pretend to be convinced. And then I say, okay, it's an opinion. And I met many people like, it's an opinion by a sheikh. It doesn't matter whether it's halal or haram. And he gives me his reasons and I take it. The moment my hawa, my desire comes into play, that is haram. That's ittiba' al-hawa. We have to be very careful. In fact, the sahaba and the tabi'in, they used to leave 75% thalath arba' al-halal. Somebody tells them this is halal, they will just stay away from it. Because they don't want their hawa to be there, because they were afraid that it matches their desire. So even if it's halal, I'm not going to leave. It's not that they say it's haram, I will just abstain. Just wara' taqwa. So we need to develop this value that my taqwa has to be there. But nevertheless, especially in the US here, I don't buy the fact that I have to leave it to the professionals. Because I'm a professional. A professional is not the one who studied Sharia. See, the whole issue of ijtihad is a method of analysis. It's analysis. Anyone, any Muslim, anyone who has gone through college in this country, who has learned how to make surveys, who has learned how to write papers, who has learned how to read papers, who has wrote many types of different research things, should be able to follow what the sheikh says. Should be able to follow. And not only that, If I am a sheikh, I am a alim, and I tell you, just follow me and don't check after me, that in itself, that discredits me. It immediately discredits me. But if I tell you, this is the opinion, that's what Islam says, and this is how you get to find out whether it's correct or not. I should be able to teach you to understand what I am saying. This is how we, if you read Shafi'i, I used to read and listen to whenever I want to go Hukum Shari'i. I go to the book of Al-Umm. I like Al-Umm of the Shafi'i more than anything else. Because the Shafi'i, when he is deriving the Hukum, he is teaching you how he derived the Hukum. He doesn't simply say, this is the hadith and the ayah and all these, they mean this. No. He says, this hadith means the following because. And you cannot argue against it because the second argument fails according to the following criteria. He brings all the criteria that goes against his argument to tell you why it stands or doesn't stand. So he's teaching you how to criticize him and how to stand up against his own statement, because he knows what he's saying. He's not afraid of what he's saying. And the moment I start saying, leave it to me, I was in one of the masajid in a place, and the guy was saying that, don't make fatwas, don't follow fatwas, just take from the sheikh the way it is. If you don't have a sheikh, you don't have a deen. Come on, that's not correct. That's not correct. You don't have a deen if you don't follow Allah Azza wa Jal. That's the only criteria. It's not because we follow the sheikh or not. The sheikh should not stand between me and Allah Azza wa Jal. The sheikh should teach me how to be closer to Allah Azza wa Jal. The alim should teach me how to be closer to Allah Azza wa Jal. He cannot be a barrier between me and Allah. And this is one of the most important reasons why the Muslim Ummah had declined in the last 200 years. Because in the last 200 years, the sheikhs, the ulama, the scholars, they became a block between the Ummah, between the people and their God. That's how Christianity turned out to be, and they lost their ground in Europe when the popes and the priests, they became the links between the people and Allah and God and Allah Azza wa Jal. Then the people eventually, they were no longer Christians. The people, they were no longer Christians. They were followers of the priest and the popes. And with the priest and the popes, they went astray, the people were lost. So then by the same token, yes, there is taqleed in Islam. There is taqleed, there is imitation, but imitation with knowledge. With knowledge. I follow you, but you have to teach me what is your method. Don't leave me ignorant. As I mentioned earlier, in response to this question, we do not qualify to be ignorance. Ignorance is a great privilege. It's a great privilege. Just like being insane, majnoon, you know, someone who doesn't have a brain, it's a great privilege. Because you will not be asked by Allah Azza wa Jal, you go to Jannah directly. But we don't qualify to be majnoon. Like I'm retarded. I don't qualify to be retarded. Because I'm not. I have a brain and I have knowledge. And I did not grow in the mountains of Malka, my village, behind the sheep, where I did not attend the schools. I did attend the schools. And I did read. I read the Quran. I read the Hadith. And I can do analysis. And there is a proof, because I have a PhD. You have an engineering degree. He is about to do his computer science, or his education, or philosophy. Or each one of us here has a degree. We have proven that we are able to read, analyze, do research, and get to conclusions. Why in the world I cannot get a conclusion on the issue of election? You tell me this is, if you don't elect, you are doomed, you go to hell. This is how. How? Why? Tell me why. It could be right, but show me. Show me with evidences that this is the case. And I can rationalize. I'm not an idiot. Or do not assume. See, because what really helps me a lot sometimes, that someone who stands, who sits here, or on the member, he assumes that the people in front of him, 2,000 people, or more, and that they are ignorant. So he just brings dumps ideas, and he assumes no one is going to check behind him or to rationalize. That's not right. That's not how Islam is. When Umar radiallahu anhu stood up one day and he said, I have been told that the dowry for women is becoming too large, and our men are not able to marry or to refrain from marriage because of the dowry. So we have to put a limit. We have to put a limit to this. He is trying to solve a problem. Now this is Umar talking to thousands of Muslims, all Muslims in Medina, men and women. A woman who healed him, she approached him, whether it's the same time or after. She said, how is it to limit something that Allah Azza wa Jalla did not put a limit to? He said, in the Quran, Allah says, وَإِنْ آتَيْتُمْ إِحْدَاهُنَّ قِنْطَارًا. And قِنْطَار is means tons of gold, ton. And ton means unlimited. No one's going to give a ton of gold. Ton of gold. 1,000 kilograms of gold. Let's say, that's too much. Allah Azza wa Jalla says, if you pay dowry as qintar, and here you, Umar, you want to say, just make it 2 kilograms, to limit it. How dare you? He pulled back, he said, I'm sorry. أَخْطَأَ عُمَرُ وَإِصَابَةَ إِمْرَأَةٍ. Umar is wrong. Again, this is example, and this is woman. And a woman also, a woman, in the Quran, this is not in the narrations of Umar, because somebody would come and say, brother, but this story is not authentic. And we can argue about authenticity for a couple of hours. But this is the Quran. In the Quran, there is a surah called Al-Mujadil. A woman comes to the Prophet ﷺ and says, Ya Rasulullah, my husband, he made a statement against me that he doesn't want to live with me as a wife, and he's not divorcing me. It's called Zihar. أنت علي كظهر أمي. He told his wife, I will deal with you just like my mom, my mother. But she's not divorced. So she came to the Prophet ﷺ. And the Prophet ﷺ told her, when your husband is too old, just be nice to him. She said, that's not what I want. I want a rule. I want a rule from Allah Azza wa Jalla that tells me whether it's valid or invalid. Don't tell me how to be to my wife, to my husband. I know how to deal with my husband. But I want a rule. This, she argued with the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. She wanted a rule from Allah Azza wa Jalla. And Allah revealed the surah called Al-Mujadil. قَدْ سَمِعَ اللَّهُ قَوْلَ الَّتِي تُجَادِلُكَ فِي زَوْجِهَا وَتَشْتَكِي إِلَى اللَّهِ. Allah has heard the woman who was arguing with you about her husband. And she is complaining to Allah Azza wa Jalla. And here is what Allah Azza wa Jalla says. So a woman in the Muslim society, because in our society sometimes they say, oh, women don't know. So they don't even have the right to be out of the scope of knowledge. So we have to know, and we have to rationalize, and we have to think. It's not that there's a difference between rationalize to extract the rule, to make ijtihad. I'm not saying you cannot make ijtihad unless you are able to. But at least if I make the ijtihad, I already made the effort. So now I've done it. So you should be able to understand what I have done. That's all I'm saying. Because sometimes some people say, oh, the brother is calling everybody to be a mujtahid. That's not true. I'm not saying that. Not everybody can be a mujtahid. A mujtahid means the one who can derive a rule. That's a tedious process. It requires good knowledge and effort and dedication. It can be done. You can acquire it, but it requires a big process. But if I do the ijtihad, if I have the ability, and I have done the effort, and I made the dedication, I've done all of that, from this time on, you did not do the ijtihad, but at least you have the privilege and the right and the duty and the responsibility of understanding how I have done it. That's not difficult. That's not out of the world. And that should be done by everyone who has the ability to think and rationalize and research, which is us, all of us. In this country, Muslims in this country, I would be very surprised if there is one who does not qualify to be able to analyze. Muslims. I haven't seen yet a Muslim here in this country who does not have enough knowledge to do good analysis. Right? Tell me if there is. Maybe there are some from. There is a percentage of people who don't have tools, knowledge tools, but not the Muslims.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. Podcasts on current events, Islamic guidance, Quran tafsir, and seerah are available at islampodcasts.com as well as on iTunes. Rate, review, and comment and let us know how we can grow in our knowledge to better serve our community. Please subscribe, share, and tell a friend about islampodcasts.com.